From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. When you get an alert about a major snowstorm, a tornado, or a warning for elevated fire danger, like some of us in central Illinois have this afternoon, you're probably getting that information from the National Weather Service. It's a government agency that's been around for more than 150 years, and its functions and its reach are vast. But the cuts and mass firings within the federal government under the Trump administration have come for the Weather Service and its parent agency, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We'll call that NOAA for short. It's estimated Elon Musk's Doge has fired more than 800 workers at NOAA so far. Last week on CNN, one of those fired workers, Tom DiLiberto, talked about what that means.
We know extreme weather is going to happen, hurricanes, tornadoes, snowstorms. And now we're asking an agency to basically try and forecast these, make the public aware of the impacts, but do it with less people. You're just asking for a mistake to happen. You're asking for burnout to occur. And it's just pointless.
What's going on with the National Weather Service staffing in Illinois still isn't entirely clear. NOAA has been telling news outlets, quote, "Per longstanding practice, we are not discussing internal personnel and management matters. NOAA remains dedicated to its mission, providing timely information, research, and resources that serve the American public and ensure our nation's environmental and economic resilience," end quote. Nevertheless, we are going to spend the first part of our show talking about what's happening and what it means for how we forecast and prepare for the weather. Trent Ford works frequently with these agencies, in his job as the Illinois State climatologist. Trent, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
And Jeff Frame is a teaching associate professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Jeff, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. How do you keep track of the weather? How worried are you about being able to keep getting accurate information about the weather? Or maybe you even got laid off or know someone who got laid off from one of these agencies. We'd love to hear your story if you're willing to share it. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, I want to start by getting a better sense of all the different sort of work that NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, does when it comes to the weather beyond just the Weather Service. So, Jeff, talk about what are some of NOAA's biggest functions.
Yeah, aside from the Weather Service, NOAA does a lot with weather and with climate. They maintain a large archive of weather and climate data going back decades or sometimes over a century. They're involved not only in the prediction of weather on the short range and issuing those warnings that you talked about, but they're also involved in climate prediction and climate projection. And that's just the atmospheric side of things. There's also a whole ocean side of things, right? The Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, doing a variety of roles with fisheries, monitoring, water quality and so forth.
So Trent, let's then focus on the National Weather Service and NOAA, I guess. What sort of presence do they have in a state like Illinois?
Yeah, so the National Weather Service actually operates out of CWAs, a kind of county warning areas. And so that way, the folks who work in a CWA, there's actually five that serve different parts of the state of Illinois. The people, the forecasters, the hydrologists, the communicators that are working in each office live in the place in which they work. So, for example, the one that serves most of central Illinois is based in Lincoln, and the folks who are there aren't coming from DC, for example. They're folks who actually live in Lincoln and Bloomington and Peoria and Champaign. And that allows them to not only be able to focus on the weather that is affecting central Illinois, for example, or the Chicagoland area or St. Louis, depending on the office, but also living where they work means that they understand the culture and sort of the priorities of the communities and the connections, which is really, really important because it's not just about the data that they provide, but those connections so that they can understand how decisions get made in a specific area and can target the forecast and the communication to that to protect people the most effective way.
Trent, is there anything to be said for the all-important ability of the weather forecaster to just look out the window from time to time as well?
You know, sometimes, I mean, that is an important thing. And you go to National Weather Service offices and they do have windows in their offices and folks are looking outside. You know, in one way, just as an example, you know, sometimes we can catch, especially when we get that kind of wispy snow, or very light rain, the radar, which is shooting higher up in the atmosphere than the surface, it may be showing that it's precipitating when in reality a lot of that water is evaporating before it hits the ground. So we may not actually be experiencing that. And that's a good example of how maybe we could step outside, hold our hand out. But you know, the impact of the local offices from the National Weather Service and National Weather Service headquarters and centers regionally is immense everywhere we go across the entire country.
Yeah, in my career in radio, I've probably relayed hundreds of weather forecasts from the National Weather Service, and I don't think I ever did so with a window to the outside. So that's why my personal interest in that. All right, Jeff, let's talk about the Weather Service. What the work it does, how talk about how it's important when there are so many, you know, in the world of meteorology, when people see forecasts from so many other sources, right? Day to day, TV news, radio news, different apps, things like that.
Right, that's a great question. And when you open up your favorite weather app and you get a forecast, well, that forecast actually comes from the National Weather Service. It's either the official forecast that was designed by forecasters, or it might be a blend of different models or one single model, but all of those data are provided by the National Weather Service. When you hear a tornado warning, for example, or a severe thunderstorm warning, that warning wasn't issued by your Yahoo Weather app. That warning wasn't issued by the local TV station or radio station where you might have heard it. That warning was issued by a trained, experienced forecaster at the National Weather Service. So, for example, saying, I have a weather app, we don't need the National Weather Service. Well, that's like saying, we don't need farmers because we have grocery stores.
Talk about the popularity of the weather. What do you know about how popular or unpopular the Weather Service is among members of the public?
The Weather Service is actually very popular because people want to be alerted to potentially, life-threatening weather conditions, and they want to know the forecast from everything. You know, what should I wear today? Or will it rain on my kid's baseball game tonight? And so a survey was taken a couple weeks ago, and the Weather Service actually ranked as the most popular government agency, believe it or not, even scoring higher than the National Park Service. And people love the national parks. So the Weather Service is very, very popular. Among a lot of people, I think it was something like 80% favorability rating.
All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we are talking about job cuts at the National Weather Service and its parent agency, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Hundreds of cuts, maybe even more than that coming so far under Elon Musk and President Trump's DOGE efforts, so-called Department of Government Efficiency. We're talking about this with Jeff Frame, Associate Professor in Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the U of I Urbana-Champain, and Trent Ford, who is the Illinois State Climatologist. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. Trent, I want to share with you a message we got in our texting group. This is from Randy in rural Peoria County, who said, "The last few years where we live, the day-to-day forecast dealing with rain and conditions has been going downhill. Farming is a weather-hungry activity. My wife now goes on several online sources, compares the results, then gives me her best interpretation. I wonder if some important safety will be lost." He goes on to say he's not a fan of privatization, and we'll come back to that a little later in our conversation. But let's focus on what he said about farming. Trent, talk about what the Weather Service does in the context of American agriculture.
Yeah, I mean, it's critical. Actually, way back when, several decades ago, the National Weather Service wasn't under NOAA. It was actually under the USDA because the U.S. could recognize the importance of timely weather forecasts and all the way out to climate timescales for farming. And so, yeah, the National Weather Service serves many needs of agriculture. I think Randy there in Peoria County spoke to that. You can think about day-to-day weather variability. I mean, now we're still on the sort of the front edge of spring planting season here, but as we get closer to the heart of April, you know, folks are going to be looking out to say, okay, how wet are the soils? What's the planting weather look like? Is it going to rain over into the next week or the next 2 weeks? And what are the windows of opportunities? And those forecasts are initially coming from the National Weather Service. And then this time of year as well. We're kind of transitioning from winter to spring, and the National Weather Service offices, all of them that serve Illinois, are in constant communication with fruit and vegetable growers across the state to understand kind of where they're, especially the perennial plants, think about fruit trees and things like that, where they're at in their spring phenology. Because if they're moving a little bit too soon, a little bit too quickly, could be at an increased risk of freeze or frost damage. And that actually affects the National Weather Service warning or watches as far as freeze advisory is concerned. So they're, again, it's not just looking at the weather, but in constant communication with farmers to better understand what possible hazards are coming from the weather for agriculture. That goes all the way through the growing season. So yeah, it's an absolutely among many sectors, the National Weather Service is an absolutely necessary and important agency for farmers all across the country and even here in Illinois.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Mike is on the line from Oglesby, Illinois. Mike, thank you for calling in.
Hi. Yeah, I teach at the Illinois Valley Community College, and I teach science courses. I'm a geologist, and I, of course, use the Illinois State Climatologist website frequently, but the National Weather Service products are just amazing and super useful in the classroom. So a couple of them that I use a lot, one is at the beginning of the semester when I talk to students about how science works and how it's applied. If you go to the forecast page on the National Weather Service site, there is a link to the forecast discussion. So you can actually, they not only post the forecast, but they also on the discussion page discuss uncertainty. Like, what are the models indicating? Why did they pick the model that they did for today's forecast? And it's a really useful, practical explanation for students to understand, oh, when we talk about uncertainty in science, this is how it can be used on a day-to-day basis. And then, of course, the other products they have, the weather maps, the satellite images, the radar, all of that is extremely useful because it's showing that and then also talking about what's happening outside the window of the classroom and relating those two things to each other. So I just don't know what I would do without everything that the National Weather Service provides. It's incredibly useful, and it's all free. We get to use it whenever we want it.
Mike, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. I really appreciate it. And I too, will endorse the forecast discussion. It's one of those nerdy things you can find if you click through a couple of links down into the National Weather Service website. But it is interesting. There's even a glossary mode, so you can try and understand some of the terms that are foreign to those of us who haven't studied this stuff in college. Jeff, I don't know if you want to respond to anything Mike said there, or we can move on in the discussion.
No, absolutely. I teach meteorology. One of the courses I teach here at the U of I is weather forecasting. And in a couple of weeks, as part of my students' weekly labs, they're going to be writing forecast discussions patterned after those written by the National Weather Service. And I can't stress enough how important those discussions are to educating people about meteorology. Basically, you go read the area forecast discussion from Lincoln or from Chicago. It's really an open source textbook on the current weather pattern. And if you want to learn about hurricanes and how tropical cyclones work, well, read the NHC forecast discussions from the National Hurricane Center that are issued every 6 hours for each storm that's active in the Atlantic and Eastern Pacific, or read the Storm Prediction Center outlooks. And obviously, we do have a chance of severe weather around here late Friday evening. And so those outlooks are being issued by the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma. And they're just a valuable resource. I know when I was learning meteorology, I mean, you never stop learning meteorology, but those were an invaluable resource to go out and learn beyond the classroom.
Jeff, we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here, but I want to come back to something else we got a text message from Randy earlier. He said he thought the forecasts had been going downhill. I got to say, in my personal experience, I find it's the opposite. Maybe I'm conflating things, but I mean, I get a warning now that it's going to rain in 10 or 15 minutes. I have time to go put the cover on the grill that I forgot to cover up last night and protect it from rust. Talk about that. Are forecasts really getting worse? Are they getting better? What is the sort of trend in the industry?
Oh, forecasts are getting better by every metric. Forecasts have improved in recent decades, and they continue to do so. Actually, one of our big achievements in recent years was solving the hurricane intensity problem, where we were able to improve our track forecast for these hurricanes, but the intensity forecasts were lagging a bit. But now, in the past 15 or so years, we've made noticeable improvement in being able to forecast hurricane intensity, and a lot of that was driven by better models funded by scientists and developers working at NOAA and the National Hurricane Center.
All right, we are going to take a break. Let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Trump administration's job cuts, hundreds so far at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Weather Service, and what that means for us here in Illinois. My guests are Trent Ford, the Illinois State climatologist, and Jeff Frame, professor in meteorology and atmospheric sciences at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. If you want to join us today, how does the Weather Service affect you in your day-to-day life and planning? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come after a break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're spending the first half of the program today on the mass firings at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and its subsidiary agency, the National Weather Service. We're talking about the work those agencies do in Illinois and beyond and what's at stake with this significant reduction in personnel. We heard from members of our texting group about this. Franny in Hinckley told us, in 1967, I was living on the south side of Chicago and saw the destruction the Oak Lawn tornado caused. I was living in Oswego in 1990 and experienced the Plainfield tornado. 29 people lost their lives. Many of my neighbors lost their homes. We need accurate and timely forecasts. Predicting weather should never be a for-profit business. We're talking about this right now with Professor Jeff Frame, who teaches meteorology at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Trent Ford, Illinois State climatologist. You can join us at 800-222-9455. All right, Jeff, what do we know, and maybe more to the point, what don't we know about what's been happening in the National Weather Service and NOAA so far in the Trump administration?
Right. So I looked up some numbers this morning, and it looks like around 880 employees across all of NOAA were fired recently. And that includes over 100 National Weather Service forecasters. Now, I was hopeful Saturday morning. I saw somebody who was fired post online that he was rehired. But it turned out, I think only 16 people across all of NOAA were rehired on Saturday. And then on top of that, right, there was the deferred resignation email that went out, or the fork in the road email that some of your listeners may be familiar with. And another 500 people across NOAA took that. And whereas a lot of the folks who were fired are young and new employees, although some did transfer over from other agencies or were recently promoted, these deferred resignations were a lot of senior staff. So, for example, each Weather Service office has a meteorologist in charge, a science and operations officer, and a warning coordination meteorologist. And there are several offices around the country where one of those offices are vacant. And I believe the office in Houston, two of those offices are vacant. So this amounts to already a 10% staff reduction across the Weather Service. And the agency was already short-staffed heading into this. And that's been a perennial problem that's gone on for at least the last few presidential administrations.
Trent, there have been sentiments in all this that maybe we should privatize the weather, give this over to the likes of AccuWeather or somebody else. I think Project 2025 called for breaking up NOAA and commercializing the National Weather Service so they would sell their data to other apps or companies. I wonder, even if you disagree with that, is there a steel man case, like a best case for why this might be a good idea that you can articulate?
Well, Yeah, Brian. I mean, we have what we call the Weather Enterprise, and it's kind of sister the Climate Enterprise. And this includes the National Weather Service and folks like Jeff and myself, but it also includes private sector, existing strong private sector players. And you mentioned AccuWeather and many others. And the business model for those folks is to take the National Weather Service information, the data that they get by having the wealth of satellites and models that many of these private corporations just simply couldn't afford themselves, and adding a value added for a specific sector or specific users. So we talked about ag. There are numerous kind of ag weather companies and folks out there who are targeting weather information for farmers, because your farmer, your, let's say, corn grower, your peach grower, your beef producer, they may need a little bit more information or a little bit more specific information than, for example, the National Weather Service is going to provide, because the National Weather Service has an entire kind of public focus. So that's sort of the business model. I don't say that as an argument for what you just talked about, the privatization, because sort of what's been proposed is taking it a step even farther, and really just distills the National Weather Service down to data, which it's not, of course, just data. We just talked, Jeff and I just talked about the wealth of information and knowledge and expertise that the people, the employees of the National Weather Service bring. And so the issue with thinking about the National Weather Service as just a data provider is that it really removes that public good service that it has. Because yes, while that farmer may have the resources and may see the incentive to pay a little extra for that kind of value-added product that they're getting from whatever company, the average citizen in Chicago or in Bloomington Normal, is not going to want to, at least I won't want to, pay to figure out where the tornado that's coming into my town is coming, or when we're going to get the extreme heat wave that we need to open up cooling shelters and things like that. So, there is a use case, there's many use cases for private weather services, and they work really well for those use cases, but it's not something that we can necessarily pull into to serve the public good.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-222-9455. Cindy is calling from McLean County. Cindy, thank you for calling in.
Yes, certainly. I have another perspective that we haven't talked about here, and that's kind of the future of the people willing to serve the public interest and safety and people that are really interested in weather. The instance is this: our grandson is a junior in college, and he is a meteorology major. He has wanted to be a meteorologist since he was a toddler, and he is enjoying the work that he's doing at the university. He applied for an internship and received a letter in return: "Thank you for your application. We don't have the personnel to provide this particular program." And according to what I've read, the cuts have made it impossible for them to have interns. And it bothers me, of course, on one level because he doesn't get this practical experience, but it also makes me think about the number of other people just like him who would have a lot to add as far as enthusiasm, intellect, engagement to whatever the National Weather Service has them do.
Yeah, Cindy, thank you so much for sharing that. Do you get the sense, is he now sort of less willing or to consider government work as he's trying to chart his future path in life?
I haven't talked to him deeply about it. I just know that he won't disengage. This is what he loves.
Yeah.
And I think that government service might be a question mark, but it's not going to dim his wanting to be a part of meteorology in the future. I just wonder if he isn't like a lot of other people, college students that have invested their time in meteorology and find that there isn't a pathway to an internship where they can learn the practical ins and outs.
Cindy, thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that. And Jeff, maybe you can speak to this with your own students at the University of Illinois. Are people getting turned down for opportunities or finding that they aren't there the way they might have been, you know, 6 months ago or maybe even 6 years ago? And, you know, are people reluctant to make, you know, the government their employer?
Yeah, and I want to say I understand Cindy's grandson very well. I'm in the same boat in that I wanted to do weather ever since I was about 6 years old. And it's a lot more common in meteorology, actually, than you would think. We're probably about half of all our students have always had this interest in the weather. And, you know, in elementary school, people would be asking me forecasts and things like that. Now, one thing I have heard of, a program that was canceled, was what's known as the National Weather Service Summer Volunteer Program. At some offices, including our local office here in Lincoln, where I did write reference letters for a couple of our students for that. And then I heard last week or the week before from some of those students who applied that, yeah, due to staffing shortages, we can no longer or we cannot offer the program this year. And what that allows students to do is basically go into the office 1 or 2 days a week and either help with research activities, certainly job shadow forecasters. When I did that as a college student, I would help verify severe thunderstorm warnings. And that's a very valuable position to get real life, real world experience.
All right. Well, this is a conversation that is going to continue, and we will, I'm sure, return to it as we learn more about the downstream consequences for us here in Illinois of these, again, firings at the National Weather Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Trent Ford is the Illinois State climatologist. Jeff Frame is an associate professor in climate meteorology and atmospheric sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Trent and Jeff, thanks for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.